Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Companies that address issues and solutions for the Black community. We Talk Production presenting you tonight, Black Urban America. The lineup on Saturday, we have Provocative Thought by Carlton Sneed, will come on at 8 p.m. On Tuesday, we have myself, Black Urban America, and my name is Kenneth Jones. On the second Tuesday of every month, we have Ms. Ann Dillard, that discuss healthy relationships within the African-American community. Every third Tuesday, we have Team Nathan, Calm Down, and Let's Discuss Racism. You discuss different issues that concerns the Black community. Every fourth Tuesday, we have Donald Scoggins, who explains political concept from the Independent Party. Now, tonight, we're discussing a very serious matter that affects the entire African-American community, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, Muslim, Christian, Yahweh, or whatever. Don't you know since 2000, they've been taking stats since 2015 of murder of Black people that are 2015, it was 106. 2018, if this number is correct, this is horrendous. Over 1,000 people, unarmed people. Why? Why? That's why I want to know, T. Nathan, why and what.
Greetings. Greetings, salutations. How are you doing today?
All right.
My heart is heavy. It's heavy as a Black man in America, and I am systematically watching consistently that we are still being disproportionately killed at the hands of police officers, and everybody is acting like this is business as usual, or they come up with all these justifications. We just are 2 weeks out from the sentencing of Amber Guyer to 10 years in association with the shooting death, a murder of Bottom John in his own home. And I still have people talking about, well, it was an accident. And she needs an accident that you cannot go back and give this man back his life. And then the systematic, even before we get into this another senseless act that took place Saturday in Fort Worth in Texas, Fort Worth, Texas. It's like, do you understand how it is to have friends that don't even understand that your mood is being dictated by the senseless killing of people who look like you on a regular basis in this country, and they're wondering, they want to talk about what happened on Grey's Anatomy, and you're like, I don't really give a damn what happened on Grey's Anatomy. I'm dealing with the issue that I, as a black man, when a cop gets behind me, I automatically turn off on a side street or a parking lot, regardless if I have any business there, because I just don't trust a cop pulling me over in the United States of America as a black man. I'm understanding that this could lead to an incident that I could die involved in with no weapon. And to try to explain this to people, and they're not getting it, that you're not on anything they're discussing right now, because you are seriously thinking about the fact after each one of these killings that what would have been, it could have been you. It could be you, Ken, that somebody comes into your home and mistakenly serves a knock on the wrong door and you get shot. It could be you that they're walking around the house doing a welfare check and shoot you through the window of your home because you asking who is it. You know, the whole, just listening at what happened in the situation in Texas with Atiana Jefferson, that her 8-year-old nephew and her were in the room playing video games. And I watched, I watched the video. I watched the body cam when it was first released. And you know the first thing I said? I posted about it. And I said, this is murder. This is murder. This is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is murder. And then to hear people give me pushback, well, we don't know all the facts and we got to wait for the investigation. Ken, do you understand that if that would have been you or I who fired a shot through somebody's window in that same prescribed manner, that we would have been arrested on the spot? And our bond would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000, if not $1 million. But this man did not get arrested Saturday. He didn't get arrested Sunday. He gets arrested on Monday, days afterward, after he has resigned from the police department. And he's had all this time to purge his social media sites, to do all these things to prepare. And then it's a $200,000 bond. So you're telling me that this is what I've learned in the last month. I've learned that the price for white police officers killing black people is either 10 years in jail or a $200,000 bond. And that's if we're lucky. And then, you know, and Mr. John's brother, I understand that he had to hug and forgive Amber Geyer for his well-being. But I looked at that and I didn't see what everybody else saw. Everybody else saw this as an act of forgiveness and so he can move on with his pain. But I just saw this as another act of black people having to forgive white people for their continuous atrocities against us. And it's become expected. Just like in South Carolina with the church forgiving Dylann Roof. And then people have the nerve to say, oh, yeah, that's the right thing. That's what we need to do so we can move on from this and heal and bring everybody together. We've been forgiving white folks since slavery, since Jim Crow, since 587 people were lynched in Mississippi, since we have been forgiving white folks for their egregious behavior towards people of color since 1619. And we are still struggling and fighting the same fights we've been fighting. When is forgiveness enough? I'm just because we seem to want to forget also. Like, I'm telling you, if somebody comes into my house where I pay the bills at and shoots me and kills me, I'm haunting any member of my family that hugs them in open court and for talking about forgive them. No, we have to stop. We have to get out of this mode where white people expect us to forgive them for any egregious act they take against us. And that is the narrative that is being set every time one of these acts happen. Every time. As I was telling my son today that as long as there's no consequences for his behavior, he will continue to exhibit that same behavior. So if there are no consequences for the actions of the disproportionate killing of black people in America by the same people who take an oath to protect and serve our communities, then it's going to continue in the same disproportionate numbers that it has always been happening. And that's my opening for the night.
Officers, do you think police officers protect to serve black communities across this nation?
I think that's what they're charged with. But I think the implicit bias, well, we have to deal with what are the police in the first place. And when you understand that the idea that the modern-day police force, I'm not talking about detectives or investigations and stuff like that, but the modern-day police force is a fallout from capturing and returning slaves to plantations in the South that it ran away. So you just think that that falls out of that. And then you deal with the implicit bias that is woven into the DNA of this country when it comes to dealing with people of color and black men specifically, that, yes, atrocities are going to happen. When we go into it thinking that, just like the last time I was on the show and I was walking up and down the street doing the show and the woman calls the police on me because here's a black man walking up and down the street minding his own business and you're in the safety of your home, but you feel threatened. You know, that is always the excuse. Whenever black men are shot and killed and being unarmed, we have to understand that our skin color is being weaponized against us. The manner in which we have a baritone in our voice when we speak is being weaponized against us. The idea that we are not stepping and fetching to make master feel comfortable is used against us. And that is why when I see these things happening, or you'll see, I posted about it and I was looking at some of the comments, people, we always want to wait for facts to come out whenever a person of color is killed at the side of a policeman. Even if it's up front, it's the most egregious act you can see. We always talk about, well, let's wait on the investigation, let's wait on facts. But whenever a black person is involved in the commission of a crime, we ain't waiting on facts. Oh, we'll arrest them. We'll find the facts later. Just arrest them. Let's just throw them. But that's not. And we have people say that, and I'm like, you hypocrites. You hypocrites. Are you watching the same videos that I'm watching? Are you listening to the same police that I'm watching? And I'm going to, it sounds strange, but I'm going to give Fort Worth a little credit for handling it in such a timely manner. I watched the press conference on Monday, and the interim police chief in Fort Worth was saying he was going to fire, oh, I haven't even said his name yet, Aaron Dean. He is the murderer, the person that murdered Atiana Jefferson. Aaron Dean, he resigned over the weekend, and the chief said he was going to fire him that Monday because he violated procedures in his response and his handling of the situation. And I'm talking about this, and I'm posting about it and looking at these comments from these closet racists, and they are like saying, oh, yeah, policies and procedures are different than criminal things, and we just got to wait. And just because he violated policies and procedures, that doesn't mean he engaged in any criminal act. If the violation of your policy and procedure leads to the death of an unarmed 28-year-old woman inside her house that you had to fire through a window to kill, somebody's policies and procedures should have ended with a murder charge. But see, that's the society that we have come of age in, and because we just continue to go from one to the next without any serious ramifications, they're going to seriously continue to occur. Stephen Clark is in his mother's backyard, and they were always talking about, oh, he was hitting cars, he was doing this, and he was running from the police. Where is that investigation that shows me that Stephen Clark was engaged in any illegal activity the night he was gunned down in his grandmother's yard? Where is that? Fernando Castillo, a registered gun owner. Huh?
He had a cell phone.
What's that, kid?
I say he had a cell phone.
Fernando. Yeah, our cell phone. Where's the investigation to turn that, hey, yeah, he was... No, we just allow it to die down and go on to the next one. Fernando Castile was a registered gun owner. And he told the policeman. And he still gets shot and killed.
In front of his daughter, and his wife, right?
In front of his fiance and his child. And you're saying... You know, but on to the next one. Bottom John is in his home, not expecting the door to bust open, and a female cop is standing there and not understanding that this is not your home, this is not your house, but you didn't even see the fact that this was not your house. All you saw was a black man there and perceived the threat and drew your weapon and shot him, because that's the way your mind is thinking, that a black man in an environment with me is a threat, but I must minimize this threat by shooting him. And it would be like, oh, but that was an accident. How the hell, if I accidentally get in my car and drive and hit somebody, you know they're going to charge me with vehicular homicide.
Right, right.
Murder. If I hit one of these little white girls in this neighborhood, they're going to have me in jail that night. And they're going to not be talking about, oh, we understand. We understand it was an accident, T. Nathan. We're going to, you know, let you go home and, you know, again, and you come back later and turn yourself in. None of that's going to happen. None of that's going to happen. I could have a child at home by themselves suffering from disabilities, and they're going to lock my black ass up that night. But we sit around and say, oh, that's a police officer. They need an accident. They need time to straighten out their affairs. And we'll trust them to turn themselves back in. The same people you just say violated policies and procedures that resulted in the death of another unarmed black person. And then he clears his social media accounts. What was on his social media accounts that you didn't want no one to see? What? So when you deal with this and you give all of these things together and you're systematically watching the disproportionate killing of people that look like you, and then people have the nerve to say, why are you so angry? Why are you so mad? Well, can't we do this? Can't we still be civil? Let's talk about it. Let's work it out. Let's go to a couple of implicit bias classes, and we can talk about this, and we can work it out. And then 3 weeks later, another one. What now? And then you got the nerve to say, well, let's just apologize, and let's forgive and move on, and we're going to all forgive. White people systematically expect black people to suffer in silence, because anytime we open our mouths, they're all, why are you always talking about race? Why is this all about race? Oh, why you got to make it this way, and why you got to say this? We can all, let's all come together. You coming together and we dying, and you get upset that we talk about it and call us race baiters, or we keeping it alive. You know, I was in 1967, I was born, and racism was going on way before I was born. So you talking about me talking about it now is the reason why it's still going on. I had somebody tell me that about people like you or people that keep racism alive. No, it's people that are continually killing us and systematically using racism to discriminate against us that are keeping racism alive. And then have the nerve to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, if you stop talking about it, it'll go away. Okay, you stop getting treated for your cancer. That's what you do. You stop taking chemotherapy. You stop treating it, and you just walk around and say, I'm just going to ignore it, and it's going to go away. Yeah, what? I don't see that happening. I didn't see the American colonists when the English was deciding to put their foot on their neck. I didn't see them saying, well, we're just going to pretend like it's not happening and it'll all get better. No, they fought for what they want. But like Malcolm said, the only peaceful revolution I've ever heard of is the revolution of the Negro in America fighting for their equal rights and their place as being accepted as human beings. That's some peaceful stuff that is never going to happen because power has never conceded anything except to more power. And as long as we continue to allow ourselves to be victimized and treated like we do, we're going to continue to get the same thing we get. We're going to continue. And everybody's okay with that. That works for the oppressor because we continually are using the playbook that the oppressor has given us to solve problems. And then we're like, okay, we're going to have a peaceful demonstration, and we're going to sing Kumbaya, and we're going to all overcome, and we're going to just join hands, and everything is going to work itself out. When did that happen?
Never.
What country was formed on the basis of a peaceful revolution? And better not anybody call in and talk about India under Gandhi with me. Better not. I'm going to eviscerate them. Because it took more than just a march to a beach. And if it wasn't for the fact that England was at the end of its world power, India would still be under British rule. And just like we talk about, people always talking about, well, slavery in America ended after the Civil War and the 13th Amendment. I'd be like, what 13th Amendment are you reading? Because the one I read has a word in it that says except. So, Ken, tell me, if I tell you that, hey, you can do anything you want except under these conditions, does that mean you can do anything you want?
No, you can't.
You can't. So if you say slavery is abolished in the United States, in all circumstances, except you can throw away everything you just read because slavery still exists in America. Because when you say except and you include the penal system as the exception, then you watch Jim Crow and you watch the discriminatory treatment of people of color under the criminal justice system and watch how they are funneled into prison and forced to work and labor under a slave condition. All you have done is evolved slavery from one phase to the other. So stop telling me what the 13th Amendment says. All these NRA, and then it's like right now, I watch people where they talk about, oh, our Second Amendment rights, or anytime I tell white people that there is no such thing as a N-word pass for saying the N-word, I don't care who told you that, you're going to run across the right person, they're going to punch you dead in your jaw. And they tell me, oh, it's my free speech, I have the right to free speech. And I'm like, you have the right to free speech against the government. As a private citizen, you have the right to freedom of consequences. And yes, and there might be consequences for me going in your jaw. But you know what? Don't think that this comes from people not knowing what the Constitution even says or what it does or what it means. And then you have people quick to defend, oh, I defend the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Well, what about the rest of them? What about the rest of them? You don't even know what the Second Amendment says in its entirety. But this is where we as people of color allow ourselves to continually be taken advantage of, mistreated, and to continually put ourselves in the position of, hey, we get caught up. And people like Candace Owens and talking about Brexit, like what is that? And we continue to allow ourselves to be led to the slaughter without a fight like sheep. Because anytime anyone talks about fighting, oh, you're too radical, brother, we got to all get along. I'm not dying, okay? I'm not going on another protest with you that results in me getting beat up to prove a point if you don't know by now that the I look at Hong Kong, right? I look at those protesters in Hong Kong, and this is what a protest is supposed to look like when you are seriously tired and fed up. You are fighting. You are doing whatever it takes to get your point across, because anything less means you die anyway.
How come black folks are afraid to fight today?
Because we listen to leaders that tell us, because these leaders are benefiting from the struggle in a way that they get a few more crumbs than the people that are dying, and they telling us that, hey, let's hey y'all, let's calm down, let's pray about this, let's pray to white people.
I call them revolutionary hustlers. I call them revolutionary hustlers.
And you know, let's pray to white Jesus, and he gonna deliver us, and we gonna it's gonna be all good. Anytime I tell people, they say, "Well, I'm gonna pray for you." I'm gonna say, "And what did prayer do in Selma?" And people want to tell that is the turning point of, because the world saw it and we shamed. So why are we still dying? Why are we still dying? I love John Lewis. I love the idea that this. But why are we still doing the same tactics that have
that
not worked where we need to be? And we think because the Klan has stopped wearing pointed sheets and pointed hoods and robes, that we have made progress when now they're out in your face and shaking your hand like David Duke when he was running for governor of Louisiana, and all them stupid black folks were on his campaign committee talking about everybody deserves a second chance. No, if you done hung a Negro with me, you don't stand the second chance. You get one chance to hang a Negro or to kill a black man, and I'm like, you know what? Your second chance needs to be somewhere far away from me. We need to stop this. We need to get out of this mode of accepting the idea that anything that happens is all right to black folks, as long as we join hands and pray about it and sing Kumbaya. As long as we forgive, and our greater is our reward in heaven than here on earth. Excuse me, I got to live here on earth right now. And when white people start following this edict about turning the other cheek and allowing the systematic killing of their people, I'll listen. But that didn't happen. That didn't happen in any revolution on this continent. Yesterday was Columbus Day, right?
Oh, it
yesterday
was?
Was Columbus Day. Yeah.
That racist.
And I was telling somebody about that. I said, let me get this right. If I did a home invasion on somebody's home and I basically killed most of them or pushed them in the bathroom, do I get to claim that I discovered this house and it's now mine, and maybe in a couple of years I can get a day named after me, honoring me? And people were like, oh, Columbus. And all they'll turn around, well, he didn't really discover America. Columbus wiped out our indigenous people on an island, basically. And we talk about, oh, he was looking for gold. You got to blame this. You got to blame that. No, I'm blaming Columbus, okay? I'm blaming Columbus for his actions. I'm blaming the fact that we sit around here and have a day honoring a murdering, rapist, exploiter, and then have the nerve to get bent out of shape when a black man sells an ounce of coke. We got the nerve to say that every instance of a black man being involved in a crime must be drug related on some level. We got the nerve to throw black men away and not talk about second chances for them. But here we are celebrating a murdering, rapist white man from Europe who engaged in genocide, and we want to have parades. No. No. We have to say no. We can't engage in these activities and think that, oh, it'll get better for us as long as we continue to do what the oppressor wants us to do. The oppressor's not going to stop impressing us because they have a change of heart. The colonizing mentality still exists in this country. The indigenous people that were here suffered under one of the greatest phrases that they teach you in elementary school about the United States' manifest destiny to go from sea to shining sea. That's what we're taught. We're taught that in elementary school, that that was so great. Like it was just nothing there but wide open space, and we just moved from sea to shining sea. We don't want to talk about the Trail of Tears. We don't want to talk about the smallpox blankets. We don't want to talk about wiping out people and tribes along the way and taking their land, because that would not fit the narrative of the conquering hero. And then when we do talk about it, we talk about it to the fact of saying that, hey, we came here and saved the indigenous people because they were just running around in moccasins and sleeping on the dirt. What the hell? And it's the same way with Africa. It's the same way. Like, I heard this Florida representative talk about a black woman, talk about she was grateful for slavery because if it wasn't for slavery, she'd probably be in Africa worshiping a tree barefooted. I'm like, the same Africa that we irrigated the Nile, we built pyramids, we had universities while Europeans were still trying to figure out how to cook their meat. But see, we allow this culture of oppression to rewrite our history like we were a bunch of savages running. We were kidnapped. And you know what? You didn't kidnap slaves. You kidnapped our doctors. You kidnapped our engineers. You kidnapped those people who were making a society, and you enslaved them. I tell you, no one went to Africa and kidnapped a slave. We didn't drag slaves across the Atlantic. You drug your people's mothers, their fathers. You drug engineers. You drug doctors who knew how to work herbs. And then to see that we tell stories of Africa like it has no cultural relevance that is not part of Greece or Rome, you know, or to tell stories or talk about Egypt like it's somewhere in Europe instead of Africa, to talk about Ethiopia like it's just a desert wasteland instead of having great kings and pharaohs and queens who brought trails of precious metals to the Europeans because they were like, it's precious to y'all. We got this stuff by the mind full if you want it. I'm just tired, Ken. Tonight, the last month after the last show, it is like I've watched one atrocity after the other. And I've just watched how black people are expected to get over it. And excuse me, but I don't know. I don't know what to think anymore.
And,
I don't know.
And it appears that we're becoming immune to this whole phenomenon here.
Yeah, it's like we become desensitized. We become desensitized to it, and we expecting to say, hey, well, it'll be all right. And the thing about it is I'm more mad and upset with my people than I am with the racist response. I expect their response.
You expect that from them,
I expect that from them. I expect them to tell us, oh, why y'all's crying? Stop crying. Stop being a victim. And why are you so angry? I'd be like, you all ain't seen angry. We're not in Hulk phase. We're still Dr. Banner. We ain't started tearing some stuff up. We haven't started getting you to understand that if you're going to kill us, we're going to make you kill us. Because what you're doing, the systematically picking off of us one at a time, is killing us.
Black folks don't feel like that today, T. Nathan.
It seems like black folks in America haven't thought like that at all. I mean, yeah, we get pockets. We get militant. We get a militant group here like Africa in the 80s, or we get the Panthers, but they're small. They're like, we have black churches praying to a white Jesus in the millions. But
they're
you can't get
that.
Yeah, they're still white Jesuses. But you can't get our people. I looked at New Orleans and I've been boycotting the NFL, and I got to the point where I didn't care anymore. But I watched New Orleans after they felt like the Saints had been cheated out of a chance at the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
And I watched 60,000 people turn out and protest a bad call in an NFL game.
But nobody wants to say about Kaepernick.
60,000 people protesting a bad call in an NFL game. And most of those people were people of color.
Yeah.
That couldn't have afforded to go to a Super Bowl game anyway. But there was a killing in Orleans Parish of an unarmed black man. And I think probably 100 people might have showed up at
100.
The jail. Yeah, if that much. I mean, I'm just saying, we as black people, our priorities have been allowed to be hijacked by I don't even know what. I don't even know what. We are not feeling the outrage that causes us to unite past our petty differences to say we have a bigger issue here than if you are Muslim or if you're a Christian, if you're straight or if you're gay, because they're killing all of us. They're not discriminating. Trans women of color in this country are being killed. And we'll talk about, I just watched a town hall on LGBTQ rights take place on CNN for the candidate seeking the Democratic nomination for president. And I'm like, can we talk about the fact that black women are being killed? Okay? Can we talk about the fact that even in these minorities, the minority in that minority is being disproportionately killed? Not talked about, not inconvenienced, but killed. And we're not doing enough to, as people of color, as black people, uniting with each other past some petty ideologies that are not the issue, that some oppressor gave us anyway, that we are not standing together because we are easily swayed by, I don't want to be appear to be too militant. I don't want to appear to be too left of center. I don't want to appear to be perceived as hostile. I'm mad. I'm mad. I'm hostile. And this is the world we live in. And as long as we continue to deny that, we are never going to do what it takes to change it. We're not. We're not changing it. We're just talking about it at the bequest of others.
So what do you think we need to happen? What do you think we need to do as a people to address the kill? And I've been asking this question like for a couple of years now. What do you think we? And I get different responses. What do you think we need to do? Do we need to carry arms? Or we need to have a more aggressive revolution, or what do you think it is?
Yes, you had me at the first two.
The people in office at the local level, they move away.
Y'all can do that too. My thing is that we have to aggressively start protecting ourselves. We have to aggressively start making it cost to come into our communities and victimize us. We have to make people pay in ways that they can conceive, saying, hey, we don't want to pay that price. So we not only, and it's not enough, you know, and don't get me right, this is not any way a condemnation of all non-people of color. Not at all. But it's not enough for you to say, I'm not a racist and I stand against racism. That's not enough. Either there's a difference between a lip service ally and an accomplice. We need to understand that if you're not talking about using your privilege for the betterment of people of color, then you're not an accomplice. You're just, it's not enough to say I'm against racism. You have to stand up to it in your workplace, to your relatives, you as a person of white people. If you're not doing that, you're just complicit in a system that will use you and spit you out too. You have to say no more. You have to push back against the very system that exclusively benefits majority people like you. You have to say that redlining is not correct in your job. Gerrymandering will not be tolerated. It's not enough to listen to the joke and say, well, I didn't support that joke. I didn't laugh. No, I need you to go in somebody's jaw. If you really want to say that you are against racism, when your people start telling them jokes around you, go in their jaw. Let them know where you stand. And, you know, and then people say, well, that's aggressive and that's militant. And let's talk from a position of power. Let's talk from the position that, okay, you come to me and say, hey, we're tired of getting knocked out. What do we need to do to stop getting knocked out? Well, let me tell you what you need to do to stop getting knocked out. We're not going to stop knocking you out as long as you keep doing that. We're not. We need to change the narrative and put the emphasis on people not to be racist, not for us to accept you being racist or to get over you being racist.
You know, Louis Farrakhan continues to advocate for a separate state, a black state, as a solution.
Yeah, that's a solution. If we had the ability to protect ourselves, but it's also a solution, a recipe for disaster. No. But it's not about what white people let us do. It's about the fact that
will we do it?
We're not going to take over any part of America. We have to come to realize that we're not. The Native Americans didn't get any part of America. There's not going to be, we're going to set up a separate state and we want these two states right here for us, and we're going to build a Wakanda. No, that's not going to happen. Racist white people will wipe those two states off the map as soon as we get started. We have to understand that we have to find...
We've got enough monetary resources.
Purchase it with what? With American currency?
Yes.
That's like my child. Let me tell you something. That's like my child, my son telling me, right, that he wants to buy something with the money I gave him. Okay? Or he wants to buy, it's cute. And then we'll say, oh, you bought me something with the money I gave you. So I bought that. So let's cut to the chase. White people are not going to collectively talk about reparations, much less collectively talking about giving us a piece of land to form a black nation within the United States of America. It's not going to happen. that would be considered, you thought the Civil War was a bloody battle. Oh, yeah, because what? You going to come by some nukes? Because if you think that this country would not nuke a part of itself as to keep us from having a black state, you are sadly misinformed. Before they give up a part of this country, they would destroy a part of this country, because that's what racism does. It cripples you in the idealism that we could have to give up anything, even though your country is only great as it is because of the sweat and blood of people of color. But see, this involves things, if you want to be subtle about it, this involves things that every black person, this is what you get to do. You want to see an economic effect on this country that will get them at a table to collectively bargain? Every black person in America take a week off from work. Let's do a blackout. Every person in America take a week off from work.
They did that in the book of The Spook That Sat by the Door, and got every person not to go to work in Chicago. It was in a book,
yeah.
The Spook That Sat by the Door.
Let's do it. Let's do it across America. And not only that, let's get our so-called, if you are really against racism, you stay out a week with us too.
Yeah.
If you really want to fight, if you really want to talk, let's do it. A week off, not a day, because a day, people are going to be just treating it like, hey, it's a day, it's like a day. I'm saying treat it like a week. For a whole week. Let's go.
Do you think every black person will participate?
No, I don't need every one of them. I just want 70% of them. I don't need every one of them. I need 70% of them. And then I need about a good 40% of our allies to join us, or our accomplices to join us. Not a day, not an afternoon, a whole week. But see, we're going to come up with all
how
excuses why
organize,
we can't take a week.
How would you organize that, T. Nathan?
This is the day and age of social media. Well, I can get on social media, and I only have about 20 or 30,000 followers on my social media. This is the day I could make a post that is basically seen by 30,000 people within the next 24 hours. If enough of us got together and did that and got serious commitment, we don't need no media campaign. We don't need no money. We just need to use social media in a manner that benefits us instead of talking about who's talking about who or what Kim Kardashian is wearing somewhere. We have stars out here that are stars because of our dollar, not the white, because of our dollars, that have millions of Twitter followers, millions of Facebook followers, millions of Instagram followers. Yeah, let's get on social media and call for a day off.
A week
call
off.
Call for a day off. Yeah.
Week off.
Yeah, a week off. Let's do it. Put your money. All these people running around saying, I stand against this, I stand against that. Let's pick a date, and you start tweeting this date off. And then I also need my wealthy brothers and sisters to step up and be prepared to help with food for those people who take a week off.
Some will. I could think of a couple people that will.
And we need to do it, and we need to do it at a time where it needs to be planned so you can make sure you have your light bill paid, you know, have some food in the house. And, you know, it needs to be a planned action and say, this is it. In 6 months, this is the day. You got 6 months to prepare for a week off from work. That's what we need to do. and show you the impact that it would have.
If somebody reached out to Kaepernick, I know Kaepernick could be down. Well, he's out of a job anyway. Well, Kaepernick get that word out. You know what I mean? Guys like that. I can see that. Malcolm Jenkins from Philadelphia Eagles. I see him, but just I see them taking the week off.
Yeah, make it Super Bowl week. Make it playoff week. Make it a week that it's going to be seen.
Super Bowl week, probably a little bit after. All Star weekend.
No, we have to hit it
in the pocketbook.
We have to hit it where it's in the pocketbook and it's visible.
But Super Bowl is like 3 months away. You said 6 months.
I said 6 months. I'm just saying these are the ideas we have to build it behind. You know, we have to. It has to be multi-pronged, multi-layered. It has to be something that's visible. We have to have the visibility for it. We have to. It's not just we have to make a financial and economic difference, and then it would be like, because then that also will show a certain amount of unity for us to build on.
Okay,
and that's what we have to do.
Well, let's get the campaign going.
All right, and I will work on our part.
I know I work on mine. You know I work on my part.
We got a platform. Let's put it out there. Let's get people on board.
Yeah, I'm gonna know what. Let's have a black now. Not one day, but a week. Some people might want 5 days. You know, there gonna be some people.
A blackout for real. You know, I watch.
But guess what? Social economic injustice.
You can make it climate change, because climate change is about race also. Because those who are going to be greatest impacted
are those who are going to be. Down, T-Nation. So I'm going to start, like, in a day or two, getting people, get the word out there, what they think. Let's see some of the people that, how some of the people, everybody gonna say, yeah. Well, how many people actually gonna do? You see, it's easy to say, yeah, great idea. But who's gonna do? See, who's gonna do? You know what I mean?
That's it.
We got a couple minutes. This is great. All you cats that listen out there from the laptops, man, we get ready to sign off. But still got a couple more minutes. 909-265-9215. But T Nathan, this is very serious and I'm tired of too. You wanna know something? It's so many now, I can't even keep up with the killings. I was gonna jot everybody's name down like for the past 5 years. It's so many.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, all day. It's like they are taking our lives like it's nothing.
That's it. And we are sitting back and on to the next one.
Like everything else.
That's it.
Okay, man. You take care of that cold, man.
Yeah, I got a little cold, and I got my flu shot, and it's like, you know, gotta get a little rest.
I would trust the flu shots, brother.
I was in the military. They shot me up with so much stuff. A flu shot doesn't even pay. It's not gonna do anything. Before I woke up, but you know, this is what we have to do. We have to create a world for ourselves. We can't sit around and wait for someone to create it for us, and we can't wait for someone to save us. If we don't save ourselves,
I like the separation. I really think If we really sit down at the table and pull our resources, we could get them two states if we really want.
We need to build the technology. We need to build the technology. You want true separation? You got to separate somewhere, allow you to become from a position of power. You got to allow yourself to be able, because if you don't have anything I need, or if you do have something I need and I can take it, why am I negotiating? We're appealing to your higher authority. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. Look at what the United States just did to the Kurds, and we fought side by side against ISIS with. We threw them under the bus, and people are all right with that. But you know what? I'm going to say this before I sign off. Of all the things that this clown and occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue has done that's going to come back to haunt this country, mark my words.
Yeah, I know.
That turning his back on the Kurds is going to come back to haunt us and make 9/11 look like a day at kindergarten. And that is going to – the chickens will come home to roost. And you all, they won't have anyone to blame but themselves.
All right,
until next time, and we'll talk, and I'll talk to you later. All right, peace out, everybody. All right.
Hold it now.